كتير على كاس من التنس. الله يسمعهم. Time is tight. As it all. I have time. I'm not saying I'm not saying anybody.
So this is Brandy Miracle. I'm interviewing Abraham Kadushin. Is that correct?
Perfect.
On October 28th at the Wayne State Undergraduate Library.
Okay. All right. So I was beginning to talk about the fact that I'm, you know, this is, you know, all helpful because I'm semi-retiring, but I'm basically closing my physical office in Ann Arbor so that my son and his business partner, my son Andrew and his business partner Greg Stamatopoulos can open up a coffee shop. I'm at 1202 Packard, so they're going to call it the Packard Cafe or Cafe Packard to start with.
That's
and
awesome.
Also, but Stamatopoulos, his family's been in restaurants. They've been friends since, you know, a long time. So they, and his family also sells olive oil from their family's 1,000-year-old farms on the south coast of Greece. It's the best.
That's amazing.
It's the best around. Yeah, and it's found in markets. So anyway, they're going to sell some stuff, Greek teas and some baklava, some desserts, and you know, just prepared stuff, baklava, all the really good Middle Eastern pastries. But basically, and also do good coffee. We've become familiar with coffee in Miami, actually, Cafe Con Leche and in particular, so Cuban coffee. But anyway, so I'm taking apart my office, and today Dan Grassmuck, who's very much lives in, you know, has a Marcus Burroughs house in Indian Village, and I met him through the Kronk gym in Southwest Detroit Junction and McGraw, which is was a Marcus Burroughs building, but also we're both boxing fans, and he was a sports photographer for the Free Press and El Central, the Southwest Detroit newspaper, and other, you know, so he very much involved here for a lot of years, and also involved, you know, so we're basically giving up a lot of our documents, our historical archives accumulated since essentially 1972. I came to Detroit, Ann Arbor, from Brooklyn, got my degree at, I was pre-med at Brooklyn College, and then I transferred into architecture at City College, got a Bachelor of Science there, and then came to Ann Arbor for my master's and also doctorate. Met my wife, who's also from New York, but she was here in the 60s, got a bachelor's, master's, and doctorate from U of M in counseling, special ed, and practice. So, anyway, so we're you know, in the process of really going through 45 years worth of professional work that really, you know, began in Ann Arbor, and then I worked for Gunnar Burkerts in Birmingham. He was my professor and first employer, and then I got laid off in 73 and started working downtown Detroit in commuting from with Giffels Associates, a very large firm that did auto plants, but I got tired of that and saw this fellow on TV, William Dean Smith, who had a company called the Urban Collaborative, located at 5440 Cass Avenue in the Bellcrest, second floor of the Bellcrest Hotel. So I said, you know, what he had to say on TV just captured me. So I called him up and said, you know, are you looking for any help? And he goes, come on in. So what happened, this is 74, so we worked together for 2 years until it was a nonprofit public interest planning firm, advocacy planning. Our clients included Wayne State, because William Dean Smith and his colleagues were faculty of the urban planning program, involved with the Center for Urban Studies, which is now the community art, the nice house next to the Reuther Center, which was built after. So there was a steady stream across Cass Avenue. I just parked in front of the, you know, the Bellcrest Hotel, so you know, this is like a second homecoming for me right now. And in fact, I was also involved with the planners who laid out, you know, the landscape architects who, you know, built a lot of the malls that are just, you know, mature now. And it's you know, some parts of the campus are really very nice with the sculpture, and you know, so it's, and you know, it's amazing since that time. So that's, you know, 42 years ago, you know, 40, and so our beginnings, our roots are right here on Cass Avenue in the Bellcrest Hotel, and involved with, you know, Center for Urban Studies, whose director at the time was Dick Simmons, who became deputy mayor. So William Dean Smith, who was an architect planner, Michigan grad also, and he was doing a lot of clients, included Elmwood, you know, Citizens District Council, the Lafayette Elmwood Urban Renewal was moving into its third phase at that time, and then University City A, the area, right, you know, University, well, the area south of basically Warren to Canfield on both sides of the lodge. So there was rehab, you know, and in fact, rehab on the east side of the lodge to Cass was threatened. University wanted to knock it all down, as they started to do. And, they, and you know, we don't need those little apartment, nice little apartment buildings or houses. We want campus. We want to expand south. So the, you know, the Citizens District Council set up under Urban Renewal had a lot to do with, you know, they had an input, and I mean, it was a battle. So anyway, that Urban Collaborative was an advocate, sort of acted as an advocacy, you know, advocate planning and architectural assistance to nonprofits, those who couldn't afford it. Well, you can't afford it eventually, you know. He was older, married, three kids. He needed a real job with benefits. And I was still a hippie out of, you know, school, so I could, you know, we could slide a little. So anyway, he took Coleman Young, asked him to be the new city planner after Charles Blessing. And I think, you know, what's significant here is this guy has not gotten his recognition. He died at 49, back cancer, yeah. So while he was city planner, he tragically died, and you know, we lost him. But and his contribution really to Wayne State and that whole era was really critical. The Urban Collaborative itself started as an offshoot of Crane and Gorwick, who started up the urban planning program at University of Michigan, but they did all the master planning, like for the medical center, probably early Wayne State. And they were probably, you know, involved here, very much involved in Detroit. Well, they were asked to start an urban planning program at U of M, so they shut the firm down and went in two directions. Victor Schrem did more traditional housing and architecture, and Bill Smith started up this Urban Collaborative, and it was all post-riot, post-1967. So I think the firm started about 1968, 69. Their first office was in 95 West Hancock, which is now a WSU theater. And then they moved, it got booted out of there by Wayne State. So, and then they probably had, you know, cheap or free rent there from, you know, through the university, because they were all, you know, teaching, sort of adjunct and involved with Wayne State. And then second floor of the Bellcrest Hotel, overlooking the pool. We had a phone that had a very long line that could stretch to the pool. So we'd often have clients like John McDonald, the head of the Elmwood Three Citizens District Council, a retired Uniroyal worker and head of the Detroit Housing Commission. He liked to come and meet, have some iced tea and what have you at the pool. So we were working, you know, with a long phone from the second floor right now, you know, in the summertime.
That's awesome.
When we weren't on the boat, Bill Smith's boat at the Bayview Yacht Club, you know, sailing and doing, you know. So in any event, and McDonald was very close with Coleman Young. So there was a very strong, you know, that in fact, that's probably how, you know, Smith got, and his family is still around, involved. And, you know, he lived in Lafayette Park, so it was very much, you know, and so he was planning director, but then he was a little, you know, he was a, what you might call a radical planner, again, given the, you know,
can you explain what you mean by that?
Radical planning, I would call planning for the underdog, you know, not planning, you know, we're not looking at, you know, condominiums on the, we're looking at, you know, inner city and housing needs and a balanced, what one might call comprehensive planning, which is what I learned from, you know, it's not just physical, it's social, economic, political, and all those have to be balanced to come up with good plans, you know, good master plans, good neighborhood plans. So, you know, in a way now, you know, avoiding gentrification through, you know, proper management of programming, and especially in urban renewal when you had a really a blank slate. But, you know, the idea, you know, a lot of it was sold on the fact that you'd be able to move back in. Well, that really wasn't the plan. It was, mm-hmm. let's move it out, let's move them out, and let's bring in the, you know, bring the suburbia back in. I mean, it's ironic that that's, you know, sort of happening now, and, you know, with redevelopment with existing properties, not, you know, not blanket clearance, which essentially, you know, brought a lot of suburbia downtown. So, so my, you know, the roots are very much right, you know, right here in Detroit and you know, Cass Corridor. I think that seems to be maybe a focus of the interview, and I'm happy to, you know, have remembrances here, which are, you know, very strong. And for a while I lived, you know, I actually was moved from Ann Arbor to Detroit, lived in the Pavilion in Lafayette, the Pavilion Apartments and the Medical Center Apartments. And actually there was a very large network of academics, professionals who sort of tied into the collaborative. It was a collaborative, true collaborative, that, you know, different projects brought different people together. So the whole idea of multidisciplinary, you know, that was the aim, but that was pretty radical back then, actually. You know, people tended to stay in their fields. There was a lot less cross collaboration and, you know, between fields. Mm-hmm. And there were sociologists, and there were planners and architects and economists. In fact, there were two of us at the collaborative. Ron Snelling, who was an economist with, grew up in Detroit, and he's still around. And so he and I, and, you know, so the economist and the architect sort of, but I wasn't even, you know, licensed at the time, so it was not until, so I got, basically, and what happened, so Smith takes the job at the city, he needed the job, and I was owed money, you know, we basically went bankrupt, so we had to give up the nice offices of the Bell Press, but I still have the furniture. In fact, I gave away a piece of, you know, what I had from, today, to Dan Grassmuck, who's you know, involved in, you know, several projects that we'd like to see continue on, like the Kronk, you know, that whole area, and North End. We've drawn plans for Herman Kiefer. So I, you know, a lot of our stuff is more than just building stuff. It's, you know, a lot of neighborhood planning. So I kind of sort of floated between architecture and planning. But in the end, we plan, you know, that stuff not able to support the family and the other families. So we sort of evolved and we started out, our real break in Detroit was on the east side with Messiah Housing, Island View Village, then we were doing infill smaller projects with Mishnah. You know, we were very much involved with Mishnah at the start. That was another sort of sponsor back when it was Urban Collaborative.
Can you explain what that is?
Mishta is the State Housing Authority, Michigan State Housing Authority, which is really the major developer and bank for affordable and any, you know, government-funded programs, and they're pretty much the community development bank. And for a while, the only game in town. Now, private banks are getting into it, but they administer the tax credits that built a lot of. So, for instance, Woodbridge Estates. You know, we did across the large. That's all. And we did six phases of that. So it really relies on federal low-income housing tax credits that are doled out by the state. So you get a certain allocation based on, and that's really what financed a lot of stuff over the last, since really 89, 90. We did one of the first tax credit neighborhood preservation projects on Field Street, right behind Grand Boulevard near Belle Isle, starting in 90. And then we evolved into the larger stuff, the whole HUD Hope 6, which was Woodbridge Estates, and then Garden View was the other. And then I also got licensed. We've been working in Florida since 2000, 2001, looking at stuff. So we did a big tax credit project on the west side. It's in Punta Gorda, basically the replacement for FEMA City. So we're just licensed in Michigan and Florida. And we've been, you know, but basically, you know, a lot of stuff has HUD at it, you know, the federal government, HUD, you know. Is our angel sort of becomes this sponsor, you know, just like, you know, the city's community development block grants and NOF, you know, mm-hmm. these are really federal funds. And what's going to happen next at Brewster Douglas will have, you know, a certain amount, if not federal funding, it'll have, you know, loan guarantees, mortgages. So it's, you know, very much public-private collaboration. But now, you know, Detroit is starting to see private, you know, right. Development, which is, you know, what everyone wants, and, you know, it can be supported. It's still not, you know, I think it's still tough to do condos. And we try, you know, Woodbridge tried to be a mix of for sale, market rate, rental, owner, this and that, and it's a little rough on the ownership. It's taking longer than the rental is a waiting list, you know, all around the city. There's a scarcity of that, but it's getting there, you know, in the lofts. You know, I think people want loft character more so than a new townhouse, which mm-hmm. is, you know, they could get in, you know, Bloomfield Hills. So right. I think they want the urban character. So not sure if I answered the
definitely
maybe a couple of questions there, but
yeah, definitely.
But anyway, so that's, we got started out of the, you know, out of this area right here, right across the street, and you know, evolved since then. I got, and one of our early clients, Southwest Detroit, and at the time it was called Southwest Detroit Community Mental Health Center, and then it's evolved into Southwest Solutions and Southwest Housing Solutions. So they have, you know, they have a development arm. But we started out doing their first outpatient centers. Walt Fisher Center, Boniface Center was in a school across from Tiger Stadium when that was still there. And it was part of the St. Boniface Church and school next to it, both demolished for parking lots by Monahan, essentially. But the first, one of the first outpatient centers, counseling centers, was in the school. I think we had a budget of about $500 that, you know, we painted and painted, but they didn't have real funding for capital. But, and then Warren Center at 23rd, Delray Center, Fisher Center, right there when you come into Mexican Town. There were about five or six of them that we did at the time. I wasn't licensed, but I would walk into the city, you know, with a set of plans, like I knew what I was doing. And they, you know, here we go, we need to, you know, need to start the, you know, so we, it was a different, you know, different time. So anyway, you know, they and then we did other, you know, ended up doing about 20 buildings for them, the apartment buildings along Verner, and other facilities, all the way out, you know, from Grand Boulevard, right, Mexican Town area, and out to Springwells, you know, and junction of different nodes all along Verner. So we did a lot of work with them over the years. So I have watched that organization grow, and did some planning for them. I've worked with pretty much ended up working with a lot of the nonprofits around the city, you know, Bagley, which got absorbed into Southwest, and Hubbard and Richard was a Citizens District. And see, there were Citizens District Councils under urban renewal until that got eliminated. So then basically the urban renewal program, some of them were rehab renewals like Hubbard, Richard, and others, and University City in a way was a combination of new, you know, the other side of the lodge is the all new shopping center, right, and the housing there. So that we did all the initial planning that basically that got the developers involved, you know, on behalf of the city. So the district council got funding to prepare, you know, basically to help prepare plans, help the city, and there were regular, you know, sort of the you know, the overseeing, you know, the oversight, citizen oversight. This was citizen participation mandated by urban renewal.
What? So, who was in charge of the city at that point? So what timeline was that?
We're talking Coleman Young.
Okay.
Really, you know, I mean, he was around over 20 years, and then so really it's okay. All Coleman Young. So we had a good connection. In fact, when Smith took the job, one of the reasons Coleman Young hired him was he wanted a visionary new master plan for the city of Detroit. So he goes, and there was a large staff of planners who had already been planning for years. So Bill said, well, we can't do the plan without my guys up there in the, you know, the Bellcrest. You know, I need them. You know, and we thought our ship had come in. We were, you know, we were test. You know, it was we were broke. So what happens is Coleman Young said, wait, you know, so he was going to hire us, and we had a pretty, we were all set to go. We were, you know, celebrating. Then Coleman Young said, wait a minute. I hired you. You got a staff of 50 guys up there, and you want to hire those hippies up on Cass Avenue to, you know, to do. You know, it's not going to happen. You got to, you know, use your train your staff, whatever. You know, so that was the end of that, and that was the final blow. So we dissolved the collaborative. And that's how I got started out of my, you know, apartment in Ann Arbor and all the rest. And so yeah, and for a while I moved here and then. A couple places, and this was my, you know, my stomping grounds. So, you know, lunch and dinner and all, you know, this is where, you know, I lived. Not for long. We sort of always back and forth. You know, Ann Arbor was the, you know, was the base. So I've been commuting for a lot of years, I-94 and I-96 when they completed. You know, that's how I came in today. I was up on the northern side, so. So it was actually a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Coming in that way. Where do you live?
Auburn Hills,
okay.
Yeah. Actually, so, I noticed you did the other shop with myself.
Yeah, you know that one?
Yeah, I ate there a lot.
I don't know what's there. We did a lot of the shops in there, too. That was when they built the Chrysler World Headquarters. We wanted a techie look. So it was sort of, you know, a little bit... futuristic, you know, with the open web, and we had our, you know, designer involved. So we did the Bristol, there used to be an Italian restaurant in the middle, Bristoni's, and then I think they've got the Spargo, you know, the Coney Island on the one, and yeah, so we did a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah, there's a sushi restaurant there. We go.
Is that right?
Now.
Yeah. Okay.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I think you answered a lot of the very early questions I had. You did a great job. What were the demographics of the area when you first started working down there?
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I would call it campus and, you know, hippies and you had the bars down, you know, southern, you know, there was a serious, the demographics were... you know, Cass Corridor, you know, it was changing at the time, so there was a real, no, you know, it was, but this, the Chinese restaurants were still there, the two Wani, you know, the Chung's and, not Wong's, anyway, there were two, you know, there was the mini Chinatown, Alvin's was, you know, now it's an interesting place, but Alvin's Finer Delicatessen, which also had entertainment, and that was, you know, really a cultural, you know, kind of, you know, I mean, that was a in spot, and you had, in addition to, you know, decent deli, you know, by day lunch, you know, you had the entertainment at night, and then the Circa, that was, you know, that had started in the Coney Island. I know, in fact, George Blond, the owner of that strip, his son bought a building and with his assistance in Ann Arbor, and we ended up getting to know him. And later, you know, this is all after in the 80s and 90s, and we did a nice renovation on North Main Street in Ann Arbor. We used to have lunch there. But my favorite spot was a Hungarian restaurant that was just north of 94. I think there was a bookstore on the, you know, Cass. I would walk up there, and it was just a little, you know, just a long, thin, you know, counter, and it was, you know, goulash and paprika. It was seriously good. It was, you know, the place was always packed.
Sounds delicious.
It was, and I was, you know, filled with students and faculty, and just, and reasonable, and you know, really old country stuff. What's your background?
Pretty diverse. I actually just did the DNA testing, so
what's that?
I just did the DNA testing.
Is that right?
Yeah, I did two different ones, and so I wasn't anything what I thought I was.
Really?
Yeah, I thought I was like Norwegian or something like that, but I'm like half Scottish, and then I have some Spanish, 1% African, and Georgian, so.
So you got a little,
a little bit of everything.
What's the main, though, is what?
Half Scottish,
okay.
Yeah. And that wasn't too shocking.
Huh?
That wasn't too shocking.
Right.
So
right.
I was raised in the South, though, so we had a lot of Southern food.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What part?
Mississippi.
So. What? Where in Mississippi?
Northern, about 90 miles out of Memphis.
What town? What area?
Ripley. It's not far from Walnut or Faulkner.
I drove the Blues Trail from Memphis down to New Orleans, and yep. it was the greatest. You know, so all through, you know, Natchez. I actually had work in Jackson, and I was going after work after Katrina, mm-hmm. and I had because we were doing public housing seriously, mm-hmm. and so we got referred. In fact, the one of the women who ran the LISC in town here, Evelyn Brown, who's a Detroiter, who mm-hmm. got very, you know, high up, and she was running the New Orleans program after Katrina. So anyway, I got we did some stuff, went to some conferences. So anyway, I went through a lot of, and then Jackson, I actually spent mm-hmm. a few times.
Yeah.
So I drove Natchez, a beautiful town. You know, mm-hmm. some beautiful towns right there. So that the Blues Trail was, you know, mm-hmm. big B.B. King fan and barbecue fan. So
it's a more beer
fan, you know.
Yeah, everybody teases me about barbecues. That's my favorite. Everybody teases me about barbecue. That's my favorite thing in the world.
Where do you go?
There's actually a newer restaurant in Clausen. It's called Clausen Barbecue.
Uh-huh.
And it's my favorite. It's the best barbecue I've had outside of the South.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's really good.
You have to check
it out.
It's
my favorite, definitely.
I go to... Well, I just got introduced to Zukin's, which is on the west, like Livonia. You know, it's a little,
yeah, I've heard of that one.
It's very old, but it was actually very popular among the Jewish crowd in Northwest. They came out of Jewish Northwest Detroit. They were also in Lafayette Park. And in fact, I did work for Walter's. But that was more of a traditional deli. This may have been a cousin or what have you. But it's delicious chicken. They've got one in Livonia, and I think one downriver somewhere. So, but they were in Norfolk. But then Brothers on Orchard Lake is it? No, not Brothers. There's one on Orchard Lake Road. It's a small chain also.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But I'm not as familiar with the. Then there's Parks, and there's an old, real old, right off of Grand Boulevard and Brush. It's, the North End. That's Parks is the old line. There used to be some good ones, right? Like across from Elwood, Young's Barbecue. But Parks has been around a long time. That's sort of I think they may call it Alabama style barbecue, whatever. So,
I find that Texas and Florida barbecues are really common, but Mississippi and Alabama or Louisiana are less common unless they're commercial, like family owned are less common. So I have trouble finding them.
Yeah, barbecue too.
Yeah. So what architectural needs did you feel the area needed when you first came over from Ann Arbor?
The area here, the Cass Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was sketchy. I mean, there were certain bars I wasn't, there wasn't sort of a hipster crowd that had to, paving the way into, the temple. There were certain bars which you'd stay out of. But because it was, sex, drugs, and... maybe some rock and roll, but not that wasn't the primary product, color was, everything, even, so the needs, there was always, there was a need for low-income housing. I mean, serious need in the city. The economy was dreadful, and
mm-hmm.
It was, the 80s were very rough. The 90s were, basically, in a lot of ways, less until, 5-10 years ago, things were depressed. The only, the only game in town was providing low-income housing through deep subsidies. There was no market. Nobody wanted to buy a 150, we were doing single family housing, infill housing. We ended up doing a lot with modular construction, and then basically people were qualified, you had income qualifications, but the city would, cost $150,000 to build a house on a lot, or we'd take three lots, combine them into two, so you have a little more space, and then the city was granting $60,000 subsidies. So people were buying a real nice house, three bedroom, two bath for $90,000. They were getting a deep subsidy. So that was the only way ownership was achievable. When we built the condos at Woodbridge Estates, they're nice, beautiful stuff. And I think they were trying to sell them for $180,000 or what have you. It goes back 5-10. Couldn't do it. I think eventually now, things have improved. But single family homes haven't. There's still lots. Somebody could buy a lot and build a house there if they so choose. But what I think what's more attractive now is next door. It's Woodbridge. Woodbridge Farm. Beautiful old. Just incredible mansions. That was like a gold. So people are discovering that. So I think that there are these pockets of. That people are now discovering the homes in Woodbridge Farm,
definitely
Boston Edison, Indian Village, West Village. Those are they're incomparable opportunities, quality housing. LaSalle Gardens, even North End. I think you're going to start to see people. There's a real opportunity there. Virginia Park. North End, north of Grand Boulevard, I think is really the next frontier up Woodward. To Highland Park. We've done a lot of work in Highland Park. Eventually, with the Woodward line, of course that's gonna that immediately brings you to Grand Boulevard, New Center, North End, and then I hope they continue extending it to 8 Mile should be the next destination. Then go through Highland Park and it'll light it up.
Yeah, I agree.
So the Woodward Corridor, which to me is all the way, from the Lodge to the Chrysler. It's really the whole, at least, So, with what's happening downtown, Gilbertville and Midtown, you can call them, Sue Mosey, Moseyville. Anyways, she's the... But a lot of great things happen. I think the cultural aspect is really a driver now. This it's always been I'm involved with music as basically through in a way through the work So Detroit has incredible music heritage that it can. That it can draw on, and that in itself attracts new immigrants from wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here to say.
I agree.
So
thank you.
Yeah. I'm gonna put the other list too.
Thank you.
So demographic, what was missed? I think the it took incentives to get, worker, really once the institutions, the medical center and Henry Ford and, together with Gilbert when he moved, they created the incentives for renting, and that, I think that was a big shot in the arm. So now, that helped, it helped, sort of prime the pump and the market, and now there's a demand, and there's a lack of affordable. I think now now you get into the issue of gentrification, and should the, because once a little bit of gentrification, Community Development Corporation Director Ray Hamill, who is since deceased, from Messiah, once said, there was a concern with gentrification, in Island View, which this is going, which is at the time, a little bit laughable. So he gets, what's going to happen? He goes, we could use a little gentrification around here, and everybody says, but a little gentrification is like a little bit pregnant. It's almost, once it starts, it's hard to manage, and you don't stop it. So you really have to plan the affordable, at the same, you have to create the mix up front, and that's what we were trying to do with the, in these newer developments, is create the mix, but it's hard to achieve. So, right now, I would have to tell you that there's a bias against affordable housing in Midtown in order to promote the market rate and really the escalation of values that's occurring. Mm-hmm. Not to say that the, again, same thing, all the stuff, you know, most of the stuff we do has a public dollar attached to it, so it really primed the pump. It got, you know, got the action going, but now they're looking to, you know, market rate, and you know, they'll take the free money, but it's not, it's, in a way, it needs to be. So, you know, I see that's the opportunity, in a sense, for the neighborhoods and for the next tier. It's going to, you know, but, you know, there's definitely a clash of intent and objectives that occurs as a result of that. So, but, that's a tough one, because you want the services to, you know, to come with the housing, and you need people who can buy products and services from the businesses. So you need the units, you need the rooftops to really create the demand for the shopping and the Whole Foods, mm-hmm. and all that. So it's a delicate balance, in a sense, on how to but everybody needs to have those services. So achieving a true urban diverse city is not an easy anywhere, in a sense, and maintaining it also. So but in a way, there's nothing wrong with the next hot neighborhood and people, the artists, in the end, the artists who help create the gentrification, in a lot of cases, they can't afford it, so they got to find the next hood, and that's what happens. So in a way, they're the pioneers. So now Highland Park, Hamtramck, or in a way, North End, these basically folks getting pushed out of the Cass Corridor, and downtown, and Eastern Market, and things. Any developer owner wants to keep, he's trying to get better rent, and because expenses are going up, so he's trying to, get a lifestyle himself, maintain a lifestyle in Bloomfield or Birmingham. But anyway, it's Auburn Hills or Troy. It's so, in a way, what's happened now is there was a time you couldn't, nobody came to the Detroit to do work, to do building, mm-hmm. because there was no, unless you wanted to get into the public development. I sometimes call it brain damage mode, working with the public, the MISHTAs and the HUDs and all the tax, which, private guys, because there's a lot of controls and standards. And as one, very successful developer once said, nobody's going to tell me how big my bathroom should be, so he didn't want to use those programs. Now it's, everybody and their brother wants to, it seems like, wants to get involved, which is, that's what's, you're going to get competition. And, Gilbert bought most of his stuff at the skyscraper sale, before all, now others are coming in and he can't get the same deals that he wants to. He created them, he basically created the market. And that's what's going on that will raise all values, raise taxes, takes everything to another level. Mm-hmm. So it's both positive and negative at the same time. So there's still a very large community development and affordable housing group of developers, but and there's still plenty of land in Detroit. There's no shortage, but it's not as close in. And who's to say, riverfront there, that's, you won't get land, it's going to start to be expensive on the river, and so you're, can't afford it under the low-income housing programs. But you could under, urban renewal, essentially, with the write-down assembly, and then drive, the cost was only, $1.30 a square foot. It was a very low number. So, but that was that was part of the incentive, that the city would clear it out, relocate to who knows, you know, I mean, that's the sort of, you know, tragedy of urban renewal in Detroit, you know, Black Bottom and Lafayette Elmwood and going out there, and then, you know, even around University City, Research Park was a classic, right up Trumbull, just north of 94,
yeah.
Was a very, that was sort of the genesis of the University City A Citizens District Council, because it was a Mildred Smith, who was at the time, it was actually, you know, she had a house and literally laid down in front of the bulldozer. So there's a, and that happened, right, I'm not sure which direction, but anyway, that happened up Trumbull and I-94, where there's a mid-rise now, and there's some lofts, but out, you know, up Trumbull, where, you know, so the Research Park was, and in fact, the renewal was supposed to be a research park. The university wanted to have a research park, but Mildred and others said, you're kicking us out of our houses, at least build some new ones for us.
That's amazing, they got that done.
Yeah, so they did change the whole nature of it, and, but, you know, so in a way that, you know, Tech Town, you know, in a way that was planned out, you know, the university would have its research park across, you know, and it was a kind, you know, so you had the conflict between housing and research related to the university. Then, you know, Warren, south of Warren, there were, you know, it was supposed to be all be torn down from Cass to the Lodge. That would all be, you know, no Bronx Bar, no apartment buildings, no, all that stuff. It was, you know, Wayne University City. That was the name of the project.
That's
yeah.
Crazy.
So then there were, you know, there was urban, you know, this was a big urban renewal city. So in terms of the history, that really was the game: federal funding, clearance, demolition, and then eventually. You know, the final straw was really General Motors, you know, the GM plant, you know, where you wiped out, you
mm-hmm.
know. You know, that was actually Coleman, I called it Coleman's revenge for having his Black Bottom neighborhood, you know, wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I'm going to, you know, we'll get, you know, let's see what, you know, let's see how you guys like it up there in Pole Town and Hamtramck, you know. So that was really his opportunity. Plus, you know, he wanted a GM to stay, you know, stay, keep some jobs in the city. So, I actually was involved. I would call it almost like a deep throat for the. There was a documentary done, WDIV. Harvey Ovshinsky, who was an Emmy Award winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think he won an Emmy for the Pole Town. So anyway, someone at the city planner referred me to, you know, they wanted somebody to talk to, sort of, you know, on the advocacy plan, you know, who's mm-hmm. advocating for, you know, urban renewal. So I went in and I said, I don't think I want to. They said, well, you ready to go on camera? I said, I was doing work for the city. It wouldn't help my income, my, you know, my employees' future to go. So I was I provided information, but no appearance. So it was kind of, you know, it was fun. So I met, what's the real deal and kind of stuff. Yeah. So. Yeah, Harvey lives in Ann Arbor now, and he's still consulting on playwriting and film. I think he teaches at the university, but he, you know, his stomping ground was here too. That's another good, you know, Fifth Estate and the whole, you know, he was mm-hmm. sort of one of the early journalists, but it was all, you know, Cass Corder, I think, and then they moved out. But, you know, during that whole era, which in a way I came, you know, came after that. I mean, you know, I was here to. Serious, you know, serious learning, and not, you know, left that stuff in my protest days at Brooklyn College. You know, I was into architecture. We could protest through architecture.
Yeah,
we could get our, you know, which is in essence what, you know, a lot of what we did. We you know, focusing on neighborhoods and housing. So. So yeah, we worked with a lot of the nonprofit. Corktown, we were very early involved with the whole area around the train station. Corktown, Bagley, you know, Southwest, as I said, and we, not just building, but you know, neighborhood planning, as you can see. Woodward East, you know, the whole Brush Park now, there was a Woodward East. Jefferson, out Jefferson Chalmers, which is, you know, maybe another, you know, a beautiful area. Again, that's Bill Smith used to go sit, you know, we knew the area from, you know, on a Friday afternoon in the summer, we'd go out on his boat, you know, that was, you know, get a six pack on, and with the mayor of the city of Ypsilanti. Seriously, George Goodman. He said, we're going to meet on the boat again this week.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was so anyway, it's, let me look at the questions. Yeah. Are there any projects that did not, but you, yeah, absolutely. In fact, we'd still like to, you know, we work like the Chronic Village, the area around the, you know, which, you know, something I really came up with a good scheme to do housing and reopen. And tragically, Emmanuel Stewart, who was, you know, contracted colon cancer, and he was gone in 6 months. So we were, you know, that was a tragedy. I worked with also Gregory Reed, who's an attorney involved with entertainers and boxers. So he's trying to sell this was a police station or fire station right off on Michigan Avenue, just south of Michigan Avenue in the Lodge. But he's been there for a long time. He's saying he hasn't talked about, you know, knowing the area, you know, sort of a Detroiter, and he's got he'd be another good oral, you know, I mean, he's actually involved with Nation of Islam, and he's a collector, and he's got stuff that's related to the founding of the nation, which was in Detroit, not Chicago, you know, pre-Farrakhan and all that, you know, when they it all started, Medical Center, Detroit, right across the way here. Yeah. This guy in the, so he's got a lot, and then he's got a lot of the Motown, you know, the music stuff too, because he was representing a lot of the, you know, Aretha and all those. So he's an interesting, great reader.
Like,
and he started up the Detroit Entertainment Commission too. He was a Michigan State guy.
We're interviewing a couple of the Motown artists. We're interviewing a couple of the Motown artists for this class.
Who's that? Yeah. Who are you?
Because I'm not interviewing, I don't remember who it
was.
So
each of you got, how many in the class?
I think there's 17 of us, and there's some interviewing Motown artists, some of us are interviewing people from the CAS corridor, and then some of us are interviewing LGBTQ people that were advocates or people that fought for rights, things like that.
Okay.
So, I think that would be something she probably would be interested to see if he'd be willing to talk, because that'd be that attorney, because of both sides.
Right.
That, yeah.
Right.
Be really neat. I'll let her know.
Gregory Reed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gregory J. Reed. Yeah, and he headed up the Detroit Entertainment Committee. Helped found it. You know, and he's still on it. So that's how we got involved with the Kronk and Stewart and some other stuff. We're trying to do a Walk of Fame. Frankly, that includes Memphis, actually, through you know, my travels, but he's got contacts, and there's a Don Davis who's basically the United Sound founder of who passed away a couple of years ago, was on sort of the board of this, and very nice guy. First Independence, he went from being a funk brother with one of the original funk brothers to having the biggest black owned bank in the country. You know, assets over to, you know, so he was a very nice guy, but really a musician at heart and producer. So he actually helped save Stax Records in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. So anyway, so Reed was, you know, he was close with him. And so we had this Memphis connection and, you know, sort of that whole blues, you know, so we were going to actually do Walk of Fames, you know, sort of try and market. Anyway, we started with Detroit, you know, with the Detroit, and still kicking around. We met with Gilbert's people to try and do it downtown, you know, with the streetscape stuff, and, you know, basically that's where, you know, not have a, you know, basically be all over town, wherever the event took place, you know, it could be virtual, you could have, you know, Granville, you know, Motown could be a location. But, and you know, all along Woodward, you know, there's,
yeah,
it happened, you know, wherever it happens, you know, wherever things
amazing.
Happen. Yeah. And I was very interested in the National Theater, also downtown, as sort of a centerpiece for that. You know, that's an amazing place. But I think Gilbert wants to tear it. They want to tear it down. Because I mean, I was sitting face to face essentially with him, and he said, "Oh, you don't think that could be safe?" And so I would say, "Well, I know it could be safe. Mm-hmm. I've been through it several mm-hmm. times. If you want to save it, it could be safe.
Yeah,
you know, all it takes is money. You know, if you don't want to save it, then it won't be safe. It's really as simple as that." So you either work it into the plan, so you either work or, you know, work with it and around it, even if it's just saving the facade. But, you know, that'd be a shame because the theater itself, you know, is magnificent. It's not that big either. You know, you could work around it. You could work it into a mixed-use complex if you wanted to. So it's not, you know, it's all a matter of what you want to do. In fact, in a way, planning as a field is all politics. There's really, you know, it's a matter of who's making the plan. This is something Smith, you know, used to, you know, who makes the plans. There's no, like, perfect, you know, there are certainly models of great city planning and what, you know, you can look to models, but you know, cities are, you know, constantly evolving and changing, and it's really who's in power, you know, who's making the plans, mm-hmm. who's making the decisions, who's the zoning planning officials, who's doing the master plans, and who's carrying them out, who's, you know, selecting the developers or, you know, architects, what have you, the teams that are doing it. But in the end, it's less skill or reason and more, you know, influence and power and who's, again, who is making the plans. It's not what is being done or how, you know. So planning is politics.
Absolutely. That actually leads to the next question that I'd love to ask you, because it's one of the ones I really wanted to ask. What was it like to work with the different city administrations? You mentioned you work with Coleman right. Young, and then...
We went all the way through, you know, Archer, Kwame. We a lot of... You know, by the time we got where we were doing larger stuff, you know, it's Kwame time, so... But we, you know, again, as architect, we were very involved. I mean, there were stuff like anything. They're good people, and, you know, that's a good people. But there actually were a lot of good people at the city. So in terms of the stuff that we dealt with, community and economic development, planning and development, or city plan, you know, all those, we were fortunate. In a way, we were very fortunate because, I sort of grew up with it. I was there very young, and I had an in, you know, our guy became, you know, so that's sort of, you know, we were in the fold and, you know, hanging out with all, you know, Young's top people.
That's awesome.
Dan, he lives in Indian Hills, so I said, you know, so we did a lot of Messiah, and actually, even before doing Messiah, or it was like, it was more 89, like in the late 70s or early 80s, he said, we got to come to a meeting at the Acapulco restaurant. It was on the corner of Field and Jefferson, right opposite Bell. It's a good Mexican restaurant. And it was with Mayor Young, who's in his bathrobe, pajamas and bed, but he lived in the Manoogian Mansion right across, you know, very close. But that was his hangout in the back room, you know, having a burrito, scotch or something, you know. And it was some, you know, so that was, you know, that was a lot of fun. So we were, you know, that was with, you know, Smith. We would, that's when we were still working together on something. Probably Elmwood, you know, it was probably, you know, because, you know, it was sort of dear to his heart. And he sort of grew up in the, you know, that was his, you know, that was his neighborhood. So, yeah, and we had, you know, there were battles of Joe Lewis, you know, the last house that actually went down, they were trying to save Joe, one house, Joe Lewis, you know, everything else, you know, had just leveled in this, Joe, you know, and in the end, so it's, you know, that's ridiculous, you know, so, and then, you know, but people were, you know, it was a tough thing, you know, people were hanging on, and in the end, you know, McDonald, he said, you know, we're all gone already, you know, that's just another house, you know, we can stick a statue there or what have you, you know, but let's clear it, let's start, you know, let's all go. So, yeah, early on, you know, we were very involved and, you know, there are always, you know, always weird things happening, but if you, you know, even with plan reviews and, you know, we've had, you know, there's some very, we have some funny stories to tell about, you know, plans getting reviewed and, you know, depending on who was behind them, you know, and here, you know, in a way I was, you know, one guy was, you know, a white Jewish guy from Ann Arbor, and a left-handed, had four strikes working against me. But, you know, he knew me. I was all right, you know. This is, so, yeah, I mean, one day we were at the city, and this guy was giving us a hard time on electrical plants. This was with Messiah, so I had to get to, actually, it was Anthony Adams, was an attorney who was, I don't know if you know the name, but he was with Anthony. So he was hired to help, you know, got to get these plans approved. So he dropped, you know, he dropped me off at the electrical. This is where the lodging was, and sitting with the inspector, and he goes to park the van. So I'm up there ahead in the office, and I go, "Yeah, I'm here on the Messiah plans." He goes, "These are your plans right here." I go, "Yeah, those are my plans." He goes, "These are your plans right here." I go, "Yeah, those are my plans." He goes, "That's toilet paper." He goes, "You can wipe your ass with those plants." So I go, "Excuse me." And then at that time, Anthony walks in. He goes, "God, brother, what's going on? So he looks and goes, "Are you with this guy?" He goes, "Are you with these plants?" He goes, "Fine plants." "These are fine plants." "There was these other plants over here that I was..." "Excuse me. I apologize." "Forgive me."
It was all about who you knew.
All about, yeah. So, that was a good one. So anyway, and Kwame, you know, we were not involved. But let's just say we witnessed some issues, actually, with the Garden View Estates, and Ferguson was the site contractor, and actually a lot of jail time as a result of not such good actions by that contractor stuff that we could not be, we were not involved with, but were hurt by. They delayed projects, threatened budgets, and, there was money missing. The earth that was supposed to be down here was up here with toxics, that was brought in. It was bad stuff. Not a good use of public dollars. That's a whole other issue, the thing is, they're not alone. They got caught. People have been doing it all. It's just a problem with the way things are done. But we'll stay out of politics for a minute here. But literally, there's some real issues with the way, there's a whole economy that's grown up around urban renewal and federal funding and entitlement brand, and you got to keep feeding you got to keep feeding people's livelihoods are resulting, but there's some, the general, a lot of the public is paying for it. Something that should be $1 is $3 as a result, and I see that in, the hard cost of construction, what it really should be versus what it is. So, and clearly that's, when you get people who, have their own, pocket in mind, it's, a lot of people getting hurt. So, 70s, 80s, 90s, so the 80s was really, very involved with Riverfront Apartments that, through doing work with Holtzman and Silverman Village Green folks, who were actually, Toby Holtzman was, involved with Wayne State. He was a book guy. Gil Silverman was an art guy. Anyway, Village Green, they were, they've been active in the city. They're sort of third generation builder. But they got us involved with Riverfront Apartments with Taubman and Fisher, and that was sort of Coleman Young's contribution, was Renaissance Henry Ford, and he said, "Henry, can you build a Sentinel on this side? And Max, I'd like you, Max and Al, I'd like you to build Sentinel on this side, so let's get downtown moving." So that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Renaissance Center and Riverfront Apartments. So I think the economy was very, very slow in the early 80s. It was really sort of a Reaganomics. There was a lot of HUD was almost disbanded, so I, you know, the stuff that we had involved, you know, we had to sort of realign into private stuff. So that came along, and we were, my wife and I were ready to, we're both from New York, we were ready to go back and, you know, after, you know. But I got a call, and it's a job that lasted like six years, you know, finishing the two towers. Basically, we were the on-site architect. The main architect was out of New York, but they needed somebody, because it was under construction. They couldn't wait for, you know, stuff, so we were doing stuff. It was a very good thing. So we got involved there and did, and that got us involved, you know, got us into a good, you know, good crowd, you know, working with, we did a lot of work with them, and with Holtzman & Silverman, Village Green, and apartments, people involved with, you know, Davidson and Hermelin, all the, you know, the Pistons and Auburn, you know, all those guys who built, they were all investors in real estate, you know, basically government insured multifamily projects around the country, you know, all, Texas, but so that was, you know, 80s, and then sort of ended, you know, doing some stuff in Ann Arbor too, because, you know, again, the public stuff went away, and then it's kind of came back with various programs, you know, historic tax credits, low income tax credits, you know, brought that, you know, and then HUD Hope 6, which was basically Woodbridge Estates and Garnview were under, you know, federal grant programs. So the Woodbridge Estates, Herb Strather, you know, the street names are all Motown artists. And so we, you know, there was a demolition party, and all the Motown folks were there. Yeah, probably Martha Reeves there, and the Vandellas, and the Contours, and who else was there? Mary Wilson, the Supremes, was there. So that was fun. And now the streets are all named, you know, you have Aretha Avenue, I don't know if you, so, that's, you know, so we designed all, you know, all that stuff in there. That was fun. First project, I think, really the South, you know, the Southwest community outpatient centers, you know, that evolved into housing and, you know, various types of housing, supportive housing. So I was very interested in sort of the relationship between environment and behavior. You know, that was actually quite big. And, you know, so the, and with my wife being a psychotherapist, you know, so she, you know, she was the counselor, you know, so she was the behavior and I was the environment. So we were, you know, so, and we were focusing on environments like elderly environments or institutional environments. How can they be more healing? You know, how could they be more, impactful on behavior and the relationship? So, you know, the counseling centers. So we tried to provide, you know, theory, and then I mean, a lot of, you know, just various projects around here, medical center. Village, you know, on just miscellaneous sort of infill project along Woodward, Woodward East Renaissance. I remember that. That was a planning study, and then University City. I mean, that's right in the corridor. So that was really one of our first projects. In fact, I was looking at my old plans and stuff that, you know, we did stuff for the district council as well as for the city itself. City would issue a prospectus for development. You know, here's the land, here's the, you know, what we'd like to see, and that's what we drew up. So we had some nights, so I was just looking at that stuff. In fact, I was mentioning I donated, you know, sort of gave first crack at the Bentley, but they just sort of dented a lot of the stuff, and I said I held some stuff back that should be in Detroit, some stuff that should, and this Dan is gonna, and the archivist is a guy named Mike Smith, actually. I don't, you know him at all? Mm-hmm. He's involved with the Reuther as well, you know. So he's Reuther Bentley, but, you know, but this was, you know, the part of the Michigan collections, you know, our stuff. But there's a ton of stuff to say, and Kim hooked me up with Dawn Urich, you know. guess she's at Detroit Public Library, and maybe, so anyway, I want to, now that we've done, you know, they took all the things, there's still a lot of stuff that I want to,
that's awesome.
Like the university, like the stuff, the University City stuff, should be, you know, should be right here.
That's
somewhere.
Awesome.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get that together. I'm not, you know, I decided I'm not tossing stuff that's too, you know, that we'll just move it, you know, we'll find a place to store it, and we'll take some time in going through it. But impression, I mean, so, you know, I mean, Cass, I mean, I drove up and down Cass all the time. That Cass was my way downtown, you know, because Woodward might have a little traffic, you know, so Cass was really the, you know, the route, the corridor. And it was, you know, I mean, there was, you know, the, like I said, the no man's land, Cass Park, you know, and you don't want to get, at the time, there was, you know, really nothing going on. Masonic was pretty dead, and, you know, it was just dark until you got deep downtown. Not just, you know, I mean, you could, like, where behind, you know, you could go down Cass, and then you come into, I mean, you come right through the, you know, the new arena, so. We actually drew up a plan for the Mariners Inn, you know, that's right across, it's on Ledyard, south of Temple, I mean, it's right across from the arena,
yeah,
on Cass, you know, so they're getting off, the Illiches want them out, you know, they don't want them in, they don't want substance abuse clients in, you know, where that could be a good story in working with the, it's a very old Episcopal run, it's been around and a very successful rehab. So you get, you know, have some businesses that, you know, Ben and Jerry's parking, you know, you bring them into the benefit picture, you know, jobs, and, you know, make them part of, you know, have them sweep the arena for guys, you know, but no, they want to, you know. How about, you know, that's how much you want to build out, you know, why don't you go out Grand River somewhere, so. But they have, you know, nice, you know, they have some historic stuff, and that, you know, just want to tear it down for parking. So there's a, you know, there's another, I mean, that's the other bad side of, you know, the other flip side of development is there's some developers who would, you know, welcome the renovation, you know, possibility. Their, you know, their history is just tear it down and build new. You know, we want a clean, you know, we want clean land. So it's a shame. You know, Gilbert's the other way around. Gilbert, you know, is ready to, you know, he sees the value in the lofts and the old, you know, the old architecture. You know, he's not going to replicate it, but, you know, different, you know, different people. Yeah, I would say, well, you know, I guess specific to University City, the goals were to preserve as much as possible. You know, that was our, you know, part of our task, to help the district council when the city wanted, you know, they were trying to acquire and tear it down, create vacant land for Wayne State to build classroom buildings. And in a lot of cases, they succeeded. Because they had a willing, you know, willing seller, or, you know, it just became, you know, the pressure. So we did work for, okay, so we also did work for Lou, you know, Cass United Methodist Church way back, and actually drew up a project called Cass Corridor Superblock, which was going to be, actually I did that for Strather Varner, for Herb Strather, who we worked with, and this goes way back, like early 80s. And so that was, you know, that was actually an actual project that we were going to create a, you know, sort of a senior village for Cass United Methodist. And they could, you know, again, there were other, it wasn't happening. There was no resources behind it, no, you know, no development interest. It was a different time, you know, no one wanted to go in there. But in terms of, you know, I think we you know, helped preserve, you know, the Cass and, you know, that whole section between essentially Warren and what's left, you know, and Canfield. You know, so that was Hillbury Theater. You know, we have drawings that, in fact, I think they might even be in Yeah, this helps. This is, you know, Woodward, you know, Phoenix, Kenyatta, that's around the markets. So we even worked on conferences at Wayne State, urban housing and transportation, two conferences, with one with the civil engineering department and with the urban planning program. I remember being on, this was 75, 74. Yeah, and this is Elmwood, you know, this is the urban renewal plan we worked on with University City. So there you see the, I can send you the, you know, I think I sent you the thing so you can blow up. But yeah, so here's, this was the development design plan, and this is, you know, some of the images. So here, you know, that's the Hillbury and the parking structure with, you know, retail uses at the ground, you know, so it would be more like a French, you know, promenade, you know, Hancock we saw as being a mall, including a bridge over the freeway. We wanted to see, actually I took it out here, I think they told me to take it out, it wasn't going to happen, but I wanted to see a pedestrian bridge at Hancock to connect, you know, both sides. You know, without having to walk to Warren or Forest, that if this is going to be a sort of mall, you know, pedestrian mall. Mm-hmm. The Harmony, this is an interesting problem. Fenkel and Livernoy. This is actually one of these buildings was a studio, a recording studio. You know, there were studios all over Detroit, and a famous one. But this was going to be a food co-op. It was a project called Harmony Village. The feds, the state, and the city got together, had a square mile. Like Livernoy, Wyoming, Fenkel, north anyway, and they were gonna do home repair, commercial. So this was, they had a food co-op going, and got through the project, and then the contractor, there was a set, there were issues with set aside and minority contract. People protested, and the project got killed. Yeah, here's some of the riverfront. Yeah, we did. We put this addition. We did a lot of work there. That's over. Yeah, this is more Ann Arbor stuff. So this was, you know, this is some of the key stuff. You know, this was sort of the Bible of infill housing for the state, and we ended up doing a lot of, you know, still are. We work with adult well-being services in there. We did English Village condominiums. Some of the drawing, you know, some renderings. Yeah, English Village. You know, these got built. Highland Park. That's the birth of the assembly line. So we did the Model T Plaza in front of it, based on Albert Kahn's H building behind it. So yeah, Mish, a lot of technical. They would hire us. So we'd have to qualify, and then they'd hire us to help nonprofits. So Alternatives for Girls on Grand Boulevard, Vinewood, and Michigan Avenue. That was, you know, started with a, you know, from scratch. Literally, Andy Good, the director, would take her van out Michigan Avenue and pick up girls and try and get them into a little shelter and a house. And she raised $5 million through a board and built a new building there. It was an amazing feat. Crew, the major people who helped her get there. I mean, her own four. I mean, she, you know, interviewed with Oprah. We got got a check for architectural fees from the Oprah Angel Foundation.
Wow.
Because it said, well, you know, to help get the keep the project moving. But commercial real estate women, crew, basically were on the board, and they helped, you know, move it along a lot. Then McGregor Public Library. This is another one I'd like to see, you know, we're attached to this building up on Woodward. Is an amazing library. So it's one of the, it's been vacant, you know, the city has no money. So we came up with a sustainability plan for that, to actually turn it into, redevelop it as a sort of for media, sort of a specific use for performing media, you know, performing arts, kind of, you know, given the talent, much of it musical. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with the film, you know, and at the time the film incentive was in place here, which was a good thing, and you know, a great thing, another, bit, you know, something that should have been maintained. And a lot of infill housing. This is on the east side, you snap back, you know, close to Grosse Pointe. These were all modular. For a while we were bringing modulars in everywhere, and this is all the southwest. We have a lot of it. That's the Boniface Center right there. That's where we had a, you know, budget basically to buy paint, and but it was an old school. But we, you know, we did a, it was a Mondrian I was in my Mondrian phase there, you know, primary. They're cheaper, I think, than the pre-pastels. We were into primary colors. And then, yeah, Woodbridge Estates. So this, you know, and they were all done in phases. So these are long-term projects, you know. But a lot, you know, and award-winning. So we're happy to, you know, proud to say that we were able to, you know, our objective is good design for affordable housing. Mm-hmm. It's really a matter of it can happen. You know, it doesn't have to be poor housing for poor people, as they used to say. It can be. So this is you know, the old Herman Gardens, and, you know, lush, you know, we all large scale the community center. So it's Highland Park, North End. You know, these are all the sort of initiatives. And these are my friends. I don't know how you're too young, but there was a disc jockey called the Electrifying Mojo.
Yeah.
Right, for 20 years. It's actually started in Ann Arbor in 75 and went to like 95, 96. But he had something called the Midnight Funk Association. Anyway, it's the birth of Detroit techno and electronic music. Oh, okay. It happened here in Detroit. Coleman would call in on a Sunday night and talk about the state of the city with Mojo, you know, like at 1 a.m. on a Sunday night. He said, "I got a phone call. Good evening, Mayor Young. Yeah, how you doing, Mojo? How you doing today? So what do you want to talk about?" And you know, they rap for an hour. It was amazing. And then, you know, music, you know, he goes, "You want to hear anything?" He goes, "How about some Prince?"
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then, this is the Techno Museum, which is on Granville, you know, 3000 East Grand Boulevard, which is the home of Underground Resistance, Submerge Label. These guys are guys that go, I don't know if you've ever, you know, they're all over the world.
Yeah.
Mike Banks and Jeff Milizzi, they live in Tokyo. They make their living. You wouldn't know them if they were sitting right here, but
right. They're
rock stars in all over the world.
Right.
And that's how they make their money. And he wrote a book called The Mental Machine. He used to read passages. I mean, it was like a thousand, you know, he was a brilliant guy. He was a dropout law student, Wolverine, U of M, and he, this is so, another project we'd like to see, Herman Kiefer, which a New York developer has it now. We were focused on the low-rise stuff on the South End, and there's some beautiful schools. In fact, the fellow Dan, he was the principal at Crossman School, which is on the Lodge. They're still there. They're gorgeous buildings, but falling apart. You know, I mean, you got to save them. You know, the building's right up here is the Lodge. Actually, it's up here. You got the big, there's a big building, and then that's. So, anyway, that's. Time. I've been talking for an hour and 17 minutes.
You're fine.
Huh?
You're fine.
That's good.
Since you're looking at the list, why don't you see if there's any, what's your favorite project?
Favorite project? You know, in a way, you know, the Kronk, I mean, we've done. You know, we've accomplished nice projects, you know, in Detroit, outside. We've done some very nice buildings in Taylor, but, you know, some of the unbuilt ones, or the, you know, the unrealized ones were really, you know, so like between, you know, the Kronk Community Building, which is its original name, and the Highland Park McGregor Library. Interestingly enough, the architect Marcus Burroughs, that's one of the reasons this Dan, he lives in a Marcus Burroughs house. He was in Indian Village. He was like a guy who gets no credit, but he was a contemporary of Albert Kahn. And if Albert Kahn needed help of any kind, it was, you know, he would go to Marcus Burroughs. So even on, yeah, in Cranbrook and whatever. So he was a brilliant arts and crafts architect who did a lot of libraries around. You know the buildings, but not the name.
Absolutely.
And in fact, it was the partnership was Burroughs and Urich. So I'm curious about this Dawn Urich, if there's any connection to you know, the Burroughs and Urich firm. So he's trying, you know, so we gave him our Kronk stuff. Plus, he, that's how I met Emmanuel and got, you know, he was a boxer, you know, he was an athletic director. He coached football at Cass and, you know, and now he does sport, he was retired, but he does sports photography. So, but he's, you know, he was interested in anything Burroughs, so which happens to be library and Kronk. I'm going to, you know, I want to give my, so he's going to help facilitate, you know, he's a Detroiter, so maybe he can help facilitate the Wayne. And he's connected with the Reuther, too. A lot of his photographs are, you know, because he was a, he still does, goes around doing photography, you know, all the big, so I, you know, I Kronk is a favorite, you know, again, and McGregor, favorites in Detroit. We have, you know, we have some, you know, more, let's say, and you know, I think we did a pretty good job on you know, Woodbridge Estates, the stuff we did there, and Garnier, that's, you know, some of the nicest housing, especially, you know, whether it's subsidized or not, that, and that's the whole idea. So it's hard to have a favorite. Stuff in Florida. We did a nice, the project we did that replaced FEMA City after Hurricane Charley. It's a nice, that was actually our largest single sort of project. It was like 27 million, 180 units, and the community building, which is also the headquarters for the Public Housing Authority, all in one shot. You know, as opposed to these here, we've been doing in phases of like 100, you know, there's a formula. But there was, you know, that with Gulf Coast, you know, special bond, you know, to help deal with, you know, the aftermath of Katrina and all that it had wiped out, so they had some special funding. So that turned out to be very nice. We took, even, you know, we've been working on prototypes and, you know, different forms of good, you know, rental and affordable housing for a long time, so we had to take some of our, you know, good prototypes with duplex, and we tropicalized them. So we, you know, both color and, you know, I mean, you don't need interior stairway. You can get away with, you know, exterior stairways to the second floor because, you know, because of the climate. Right. And so it you know, a little, yeah. So and then color wise and so, but you know.
What advice would you give or offer young architects getting started?
Well, make sure they enjoy, you know, what they're doing, and not in it just for the money, because that, you know, that can be very difficult, can be very frustrating. I'd say the, you know, the hard part is, you know, the, sort of the business side also is, you know, dealing with. Some tough, you know, tough people, tough owners. You know, there's a difference between, you know, private developers, public, you know, those in the public sector, and then working for institutional. You know, the, you know, a lot of, you know, architects will, you know, big firm, small firm, also, and then that have, you know, they. I guess just like any field, specialization is almost critical. Having the right skills, so it really depends. But to me, you know, their careers in academia, you know, teaching and practicing research, and we kind of did a little of everything, which, you know, maybe was, you know, tough to focus on one particular thing, but we, you know, just, frankly, I got into teaching, saying we needed, you know, we started having, you know, we had a family and three kids, and I didn't, you know, your wife said you need either need a real job or another, you know, find another family, because, you know, so we needed medical and you know, we needed a dental plan. So the teaching was, you know, and it was secure, you know, so I did that for 10 years, but half time, so I was keeping the firm going. But as a result of that, I had to complete my doctorate that I started in 76. It took me 20 years, but luckily I had a professor, Jim Chaffers, who worked with the GRO neighborhood on, like, just east of here, Buchanan. There was actually a grassroots organization of workers. This goes back to the 60s. And he did his dissertation in architecture on his work there. And then I did mine sort of on Island View, you know, sort of as a participant observer, case study. I had basically dropped out of the program. And then when I started teaching, they said, "You're going to finish that doctorate." I said, "Well, I had no intention." So if you want to get tenure, you're going to, you know, you will. So that sort of pushed me back in. And luckily he, you know, it was literally 14 and a half years since I had been in, and I had incomplete. I just walked away. I got started to get busy. Needed to work. Couldn't fool around in school. So he was able to say, you know, that this student has been doing his field work for the last 14, which is ironic because a lot of it was on Field Avenue. So, and luckily he had a buddy who was running the, you know, okay, sounds good to you, if you say so. So normally your slate is wiped clean after 6-7 years.
Right.
So he, you know, so we got credit for everything we had done. I got most of the incompletes graded, including finishing some work. One I couldn't because the professor had moved away and died. So we just gave it, we took some more courses and then wrote a proposal and wrote a dissertation and basically it was based on it was called Neighborhood Transformation Design, a case study of Island View Village. So basically case study analysis, and I actually did comparative analysis of sort of comprehensive planning for, you know, neighborhood districts, and I compared what was being done in Detroit with Cleveland. I went on I called it Ghetto Tour 94. I went to Cleveland, Baltimore, D.C., Brooklyn, you know, New York, of course, right, you know, what else? Not really Philadelphia. Those, and sort of looked at what were called comprehensive community initiatives, which were being funded by all the major foundations at the time. So this was so that really became the basis of my dissertation. So a comparative analysis, case study, I participant observer methodology, because I was working there, and we had the the right vantage point, and it was a way of getting it done without embarking on a whole new sort of research project, which I was thinking about, but thank God I got talked out of that.
So we were
burning the candle at in three directions, and I got burnt out. So that's one of the reasons for my early desire to that and just finally getting tired of bureaucracy and dealing with the that side of things. We had a, we had finished a project in Miami with working with Volunteers of America, which is actually the largest provider of elderly and veterans housing. So they have a lot of property around. So we were doing stuff. It was good, good client, but just not ready for another 3 years of HUD oversight. I actually had been through that because Riverfront Apartments was actually a HUD finance, was the largest HUD financed, longest term mortgage ever given. So we would every month, weekly, we had inspections. It was just not a pleasant experience. And I was trying to go in another direction. So
anything you want to add?
No. What happens with all of these? These become part of a record, or is there an archive?
Yeah, part of the Reuther. So I'll transcribe it. I'll let you review it, and then we add it to the Reuther.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So I want to, in a way, I'd love to fill in, the verbal with sort of the documentation behind it.
Yeah, you can add a bio to it if you'd like.
Not a bio. I'm talking about the actual source, plans and things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really, definitely.
Like University City. I actually kept that.
Oh no, this will complement that,
right,
at the Reuther. Yeah,
saying,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
We like,
definitely.
And you know, we did a lot of work along Grand River, actually, you know, a lot of work in this mm-hmm. zone, not just the university, you know, sort of this whole zone, and that really should be held here, you know, papers.
I think that would be amazing.
So, and like, you know, my friend George Denamdi, you know, with the art gallery on Forest, mm-hmm. go across Seva, we did that we were involved with that.
That's awesome.
Architect of record with, you know, some of this, because they were Ann Arbor, we met him in Ann Arbor, I go way back with Seva. So, anyway, he didn't have it all leased, so he said, why don't you bring it, you know, and he's trying to do stuff on Grand River, arts, you know, created an arts district, which I actually helped name. So if you hear West End District, and in fact, that area historically was known as West End, if you talk to folks who lived there, you know, there's a West End church, you know, so he liked that, and it has that, you know, has that artsy vibe, so, but anyway, so we took one of his storefronts and had, you know, I put up a lot of my, you know, Grand River, and I was part of a charrette at U of M in, I think, 2000. So anyway, we have a kind of an exhibition of plans
awesome.
Relating to that. So I'd like that to, you know, find a home too. I've kept some of this stuff, you know, out of Bentley's hands, because I think it should be here.
Yeah, I think it'll go great.
Yeah, so.
Okay, I'm gonna stop.
All right.